Martin Walton, Ludham Society, tape one.
78, when the public right of way down to the estate at Howe Hill was closed off by Norfolk County Council. The new warden of Howe Hill, I think, didn't want people going down there, but it was a major public right to the estate of Ludham. So there was a major sort of battle started. The parish council fought it, and the Ludham Society was formed, and the founding members were Nancy, Dr. Gabriel, Mrs. Gabriel, Phyllis Goodhue lives in the house where Richie's live, Mayor Joan Clark, who lives in where Ivan lives, May Braun, who lives where we live, Charlie Thompson, who lived at Wembley Cottage, and Vi Bensley. They were the sort of mainstay. And at that time, I'd been in London for 3 years, so I was away, missed all that excitement. But there was a Ludham Society held a picnic on the stay to Howe Hill to sort of state our rights. And the thing started off from there. So we really became an organisation that was interested in protecting rights of way and the amenities of Ludham. And we used to run, like the archive group does, monthly football, footpath walks around the village. And they started off quite popular, but over the years, people either got too aged or lost interest in walking around all the time. But we covered all the footpaths and made sure that they were kept open.
We did have a record number of footpaths. And
Ludham's got a very good range of footpaths.
Anyway, 48 is it? Registered.
Bridleways. We've had the occasional dispute. There was one some years ago over Old Moo Lane, which is a bridleway. And there was an argument to say that it was only a bridleway so far. But in the definitive map, which was made just after the war, where you had to register the footpaths and bridleways, it was down as a bridleway. So that was another one we succeeded in winning. Things pop up out of the blue when you think life has got very peaceful. Somebody rings up with some crisis. We try to resolve them without any dispute, but sometimes they do get a little bit difficult. I came into it in 1972. I'd come back from London and I was a bit aggrieved at the way we'd lost so many trees and hedgerows around the village. And I wrote a letter to the press. It was mainly spurred by the demolition of a nice farmhouse at Sutton, surrounded by trees. It's where that new housing estate is by the pond. And there was at Sutton, you know, and there was a rather nice farmhouse there. The barn is retained, but the nice farm went, and it sort of ruined the setting of that place. So I wrote a sort of angry letter to the press, and I probably made some sweeping statement like, it seems to be developers and farmers who have the sway. And that upset somebody in the village who got very angry with me about it. And then I got asked if I'd like to join the Ludham Society, so I agreed, and about 2 years later I was made chairman. So that's how we got going. But we did do some positive things apart from fighting battles. We did a lot of tree planting, and Nancy and I set up a little tree nursery in the manor grounds where people gave us seedlings, and then we planted them out or gave them to people. So that worked quite well. But history changes as well as you work on projects, because things catch up. Then the county councils came into play and started saying, well, you know, plant trees, we'll provide free trees, free hedgerow plants and all that. So that took the pressure off us having to do that.
All those oaks up the Potterholme Road on the left hand side, as you go up the hill, you planted 41 trees.
I think the number is
quite surprising. They're big trees now.
We were rather responsible probably for about a couple of hundred things. One of the planting things we did, which was a bit more recent, was to set up the school nature reserve. We thought at the time, you know, in villages, often the apricot tree is so intensive. There isn't the sort of places for children to roam and get the experience of nature in safety. And thinking back to my school days, which was in a suburban background, they had the foresight when they built the school just pre-war to leave a little wood, which was probably quite minute, but when you're five, it seems enormous. And I thought it would be quite nice to do something like that on a school field. So we set that up and got various members to help planting trees. And then Nancy and I finished up doing most of the work for several years, and then we handed it over to the school. Another battle we fought, which led to me getting involved further in environmental things, was originally, you know the archive photographs of Womack when it was a very peaceful spot with a little boat shed that belonged to Charlie Green at the farm. Well, that gradually got eroded. Alex Snowing started off a boating business without planning permission in a mobile hut. And then he got a temporary permission, and then he sold it. And then it was bought by Murray, who put in plans to develop it in a much grander way. Well, we opposed that, and there was a site meeting. Unfortunately, as happens sometimes, he didn't stick to the plans. But then when they were amended, they went through. He said he needed a security upstairs flat, people keep an eye on the boatyard. And in fact, we discovered not long after that it was a holiday net. So that was one of the ones we lost. But as a result of that, I called in the Council of Protection of Rural England to support us. And they said, oh, you're the sort of young chap who ought to be on our committee. That was a long time ago. So I got roped into that, and that's a whole another story. Sometimes it does make you very unpopular if you fight battles where you think you're right. I'd never take on board fighting something unless I was sure legally that we were correct. And one of the battles was, I don't suppose anybody's been here long enough to remember Hall Common Road, when it had a very wide verge, and a chap who had the threshing engines called Bensley used to keep his engines, traction engines, on the verge there at times. And that got, all the trees came out and the hedgerow was moved. And then I found it was under the enclosure ward, because the landowners were Norwich Union. They didn't want to play ball. But over the period of years I did persist. And when I quoted the Enclosure Act to them, that it was stated in perpetuity that the width of the road and verge had to be a certain width, and it couldn't be altered. And it was an offence of £5 to do damage to the hedgerow or the verge. And I finally won that battle. And so you see in Hall Common Road quite a fine hedge growing between the dock and Hall Common Farm. So that was another of our battles. Things can get tricky when you try your best not to get into hot water. Some years ago, at the Dutch house, the garden wall was raised and big wooden gates put up so you couldn't see the house. And it needed listed building consent to do that, being a grade 2 listed building. And so I had a word with the conservation officer, trying to keep it low key, and I said, it's a bit of a problem in the village. This wall has been raised, but I don't want to cause a lot of fuss. So he said, I'll sort it out. So what he did was, he didn't come himself, he sent somebody else and then wrote me a letter and said that I'd got the listed buildings regulations incorrect. But I knew I hadn't. So I got in touch with the county conservation officer. And he said, absolute rubbish, I'll come down and sort it out. So they all got into the public domain, it all got a bit hot and sticky. But again, North Norfolk District Council, this particular planning officer, who was he was too nice for the job, and he tried to fudge it by hiding the correspondence when it came to the planning meeting. And Jeff Wise rang me up, he was a district council at the time, and said, a bit of a problem, he said, your correspondence on this hasn't been put into the minutes of the meeting. So I wrote a letter and complained about it, and it came up. And eventually I took the district council to the ombudsman for maladministration, which they don't like particularly because they have to have all their files open up. And he said it was maladministration, but at the end of the day, because it had gone through various other processes, a fair hearing had been had. And the wall was allowed to stay at the height, but she had brought back the gate so you could see through to the house. But I wasn't very popular over that. And the very nice chap who was the planning officer, who was as nice a bloke as you could ever meet, he resigned. So that was another sort of battle. We also did things in the early days. We used to do coach outings to various places of interest, but over the years, as more people got cars, that petered out. But we did it for quite a number of years.
Places like Cambridge, you know, really interesting architectural places, or environmental places, you know, we managed to fill a small coach, take 11 people to wonderful spots. Mm.
Another major thing we campaigned for, which some of you will remember, when the county council was going to sell off Howe Hill as an old folks home. And it got very, very close. And I remember I wrote to Ralph Howell, and he rang me up and told me that I'd made a complete mess of running it. And I said, it's nothing to do with me. So I played him at his own game, and I said, look, this was bought by ratepayers' money, so it shouldn't be some deal done in a corner. It should be into the open. I said, I suggest you went to the highest bidder as a gamble. And he said, quite right, Mr. Warden, I'll call a meeting of the county council straight away. And they gave a stay of execution for a few months. And in that time, Norwich Union coughed up the money. We weren't the only body campaigning. There were lots of people. The great and the good of the county were all in favour of keeping it. And it's been a great success ever since. So to get away from conflict, right from the early days, we thought it was really important that we had talks on things which were about the countryside, planning, architecture, local history, so that people were well informed. Because it's very easy, if you're new to an area, to get hold of the wrong end of the stick and jumping with 2 feet on something, not knowing. But it's very useful to have people who have got an expertise in a particular subject to come along and enlighten us. So that was another of our things.
Just think of it, 36 years, is it?
Yes,
four talks a year, plus the chairman's talk.
Some
people,
a lot of course, have
good information about architecture and the countryside.
And the other thing, I thought, well, having had disputes with a certain farmer over the years, I thought, well, it would be good to actually try and get something positive. And when Laurie Ritchie took over farming at Ludham Hall, I said to him, look, it would be quite nice to do an annual farm walk. So each year we used to get about a dozen to 20 of us to go and have a tour around the farm and find out what's going on, which is very good to get people to know what's going on, what is sort of farming regulations. So again, people are sort of better informed.
Didn't they all come down on a wagon? I remember coming down, I think. Did they come down?
Probably, yes.
Yeah, on a wagon behind a tractor.
Yes.
We wondered what was going on at first.
So up until his sad demise, that was a very good annual event. Has anybody got any questions? I keep rattling on about these things.
Well, you mentioned these things, Martin. Did you take any photographs of any of these events?
No, unfortunately, we didn't. The thing is that we weren't so document-minded in those days. And a lot of the things were not necessarily things that were particularly photogenic, you know, like a right of way being closed off or something. I mean, we could have had a photograph with people protesting. In the early days of the Ludham Society, myself and another chap who's long gone, we used to do the footpath signposting. County Council provided with signposts, and we went round popping them in the appropriate places, but it's sometimes
amazing how many got knocked over within
hours of putting them in.
Into them they accidentally.
They were broken,
I can't believe it.
Put into the hedgerow.
Thrown about broken.
No, I took on signposting for the parish council when I was on that. And fortunately now things have settled. The thing is, times have changed so much. The things that I was sort of battling for in the early days have come to pass. You know, there's hedgerow protection, campaigns about the importance of roadside verges for flora, tree planting schemes, and all these things have come.
I think we thought we'd, the two of us have planted over 300 trees in
Dublin. Yes.
Some of them are enormous and others are hedges.
Yes, I mean the trees in the around Willow Ray and School Road, we put those in probably early 70s, so silver birches. I remember Dr. Gabriel wielding a spade. Also, I can remember going with him, several of us, and we scythed down the long grass in Wilbur's Loak. He gave me lessons on scything. It would have been better with Eric. when we were campaigning on the roadside verges thing, because I was involved with the CPRE, we actually got it as a national campaign, the importance of protecting roadside verges, historic stone walls and hedgerows. So that all led to sort of eventually getting much more high profile, and laws changed. Oh, and another thing we were involved with, which was a very major triumph in the end of the day, was the ploughing up of the marshes in, that's probably good, just over 20 years ago.
Devercold Harbour.
Yes.
I remember that.
Well, I just happened to be listening to the radio and they said Friends of the Earth were organising a protest at Halvergate Marshes about the ploughing up. Problem was, farms were being paid to plough them up, and then the vast amount of grain surplus we had all went into intervention. It wasn't being used. So it didn't make sense to destroy these very important grazing marshes and habitat. So Friends of the Earth of North, they were quite a go-ahead group. There's a chap called Andrew Lees, who finally died lost in the forests of Madagascar and was not found. But he organised it. He was one of these people who liked campaigning, you know, like people who climb trees and that. So we joined in on that. I was the only one from London Society to be there, but through CPRE, who was campaigning to protect the marshes, Nancy used to be on the phone and talking to somebody at CPRE who was lobbying the House of Lords, and we had William Waldegrave came up on a very wet day, and at Stracey Arms Mill, and watched us all there, and then of course, to my horror, they arrived on David Rich's land. So several of us from the village marched down there, and the plan was that you stop the dig and dredges working.
And then
they came down to
let them use our front room as an office.
Yeah,
and we were giving them water. At Cold Harbour,
when Robeson from Catfield was ploughing up the marshes down on the left-hand side as you go to Cold Harbour, and then as a result of that major process. The government brought in the Europeans' environmentally sensitive areas policy, where farmers got paid a grant to graze the marshes in a traditional manner. I mean, one of the problems was when they drained the marshes, they made very deep dikes for the drainage, which meant that if there was a grazier on the other side of the dike, his cattle risked falling in and drowning in these very deep dikes. So the graziers, who were traditionally run the marshes, were very upset about losing their grazing rights. So that was one of the other things we were involved with. And I think that just about covers most of the things we've been involved with over the years.
Apart from informing the population in general about the countryside and what we're trying to save or prevent from being cut down or ploughed up.
Things can happen, they still do, by people not knowing what is right and what's wrong. People do alterations to building which need building consent and that sort of thing, and they haven't taken it on board that they need to check these things out. But that's a brief resume of 40-something years' history.
Well, it seems to me that it's a great history, isn't it? A lot of things have got done. A lot of things that you were campaigning for 20, 30 years ago are now just mainstream items.
That's right, yes.
Which everybody accepts
yes.
is wrong.
Yes.
And sort of the pioneering stuff that was done back then. But it bothers me a bit that the history of it could be lost. Because it isn't terribly well documented, though, it seems to me. It's not, there are documents on the subject.
We probably have certain things in the minute book, but how much we've got from when Joan Clark was secretary, we'll have to dive in and see what we can find and put a few things together.
It will be quite useful to include some in the book.
Well, I think so, yeah, because really? I think for the sort of 60s, 70s, 80s
yes,
period of the
yes.
book, that stuff is quite important.
Mm.
And certainly the business at Howe Hill
yeah.
is very
yes.
important,
mm.
because, you know, we could have lost all of that.
Yeah.
Mm. There were two things with Howe Hill, was the loss of the right of way, which it wouldn't have happened because legally it was a right of way, because it was the right of way to the public estate.
Nevertheless, it was the warden. His wife.
Yes, they thought they'd take it on as their private residence.
Yeah.
But then there was the battle to save Howe Hill being sold off, which would have been totally inappropriate, because somebody running an old folks home would never have been able to maintain the gardens to the quality they are now.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked out very well that the Broads Authority took over the land of the marsh area, and the Trust got the house and gardens. So that was another thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that stuff could easily be incorporated
yeah.
into the book.
Mm.
It makes an interesting story as well.
Yes.
Some of the stuff is a bit dull, but there is
somebody
stuff that's
have
good
to
stuff.
Write something up for us, wouldn't they?
Well, you could always look over there. That's nice.
I'll get somebody who likes writing.
the stuff about the right of way will all be in the parish council minutes, won't it?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, that will be in the minute books.
Yeah, we've got a copy of
that. It's a pity you weren't around when they had the Staithe dispute closed. When they had the Staithe dispute.
Oh, yes, that down Staithe Road, that, yes.
Before your time.
Yeah, yes, well, that was about early 1900s, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's 100 years ago, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you seen where they put that new footpath? If you go down Norwich Road, past the old place, around the sharp corner, yes, well, halfway along towards Tubby's Farm, on the right hand side, they've put an entrance, they've put a public footpath sign.
Right.
An entrance. But to get up to it, you've got to climb up from the road. About like that.
Oh, right.
Right on the bend.
That was originally footpath.
Oh, yes, I know that.
Yes. And this year, and they've had to, for legal reasons, put that back in there, although they pointed out how dangerous it was. They had to put it back because of legal reasons. Yeah, it had been, apparently, I think it had been moved by the previous farmer. I did talk to Linda about it. But because there was a record of something or other was missing out of the records, I think it seems
to be. That's why it went the other way. Onto the road.
Anybody who's silly enough to jump down onto the main road from there
will get off doing
that. Any normal person will stand there and think, no, and go back again. Yeah, but they had to legally put it back in.
I mean, a few years ago, I don't know whether you remember, Martin, I walked on the footpaths.
Yes.
It was all to do with Rambler's Association in Ludham, and I thought I did a little checklist as to signage, how wide they were, and this sort of thing. Bits and there were a lot of footpaths in Ludham, some of them just a few hundred yards long. And that was on the maps, but there wasn't a sign of it at the time.
But at one time, we did walk them all once a year. To keep them legally as public footpaths, because we proved they've been used.
And a lot of things have been done in sort of crosses of foot,
Yes. That's why initially we still are affiliated to the Ramblers Association, because they were very helpful, again on the various footpath issues we had disputes over. I remember we had at Adam Society meeting here, and it was the time we had the dispute over Old Mill Lane, and I invited Gina Surf, who was secretary of the Ramblers, to come and talk, and she talked about things in general and the law, and she said, well, I'm not going to comment on Old Mill Lane, and then at the end she said, well, I think I will. And she said, it is a public right of way, and it is a bridleway, because it's written down in the definitive map, which is the legal situation. So that was another one. But there was something else that crossed my mind, but I haven't. Oh yes, how things can crop up, and at the time you don't think about it. When they built the new bridge at Ludham Bridge, they swapped the stave over from one side of the road to the other. It should be where Robert Ball's boatyard was. That was the original stave. But because the highways took a bit of land off there, they said you could have the other side. But of course, that wasn't legal, because it was down under the enclosure award, and it couldn't be just swapped over like that. And of course, things come up and bite you in the end, because then people suddenly were barred from going through the boatyard to get onto the riverbank. And at the time, I raised it, and I said to the county council, you know, this is not legal. And they said, well, we're not going to do anything about it, and you fight it if you can. Well, you can't, you know, without resources. And then this chap bought the boatyard and said, right, well, nobody can come through here. So that's how things suddenly come up. I remember it was quite, at the time it was discussed at Parish Council, which was quite a long time ago. I didn't get any support. And David Gabriel said to me, I think you really ought to stand down from the Parish Council, you know, caused all this fuss. And then we looked in the minutes and it said, at the time, David Gabriel said, we'll meet the problem when it arises. Of course it did. That was Old Mill Lane, that's right. Anyway, I think that concludes what I'm going to say.
The footpath at Ludham Bridge, this is the one thing that I've had inquiries about with the archive group about, whether that is or it isn't a right of way. And demonstrating whether it is or it isn't isn't so easy.
No.
I know that Jason, who owns the boatyard, he says, well, some of the land near the bridge is still the public stave. As far as I'm concerned, that is this public stave. I'm selling boats on it, but it's still part of the public stave. I can't bar people from it. But it only goes so far.
That's right.
And then the bit where the shed is and all that isn't on that.
No.
Because the bridge has moved, hasn't it?
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so a number of inquiries from people, yes, trying to prove or disprove that was a right, but there was a path.
Yes.
But it went to Beaumont's Mill. If you look on the maps, there's a path.
Yes.
And presumably people walked down it, but whether that
it may not have been actually registered when they put things on the definitive map.
Yeah, I doubt it ever was.
No.
Of course, that's left it there.
Yes.
But Ludham had an enormous, well, more registered footpaths than practically any village, because they were all, you know, because we're very keen on maintaining what we thought was public footpaths, that this great list was made and put in, and we did in fact get a lot of them as registered footpaths.
Where Dave Mattock's bungalow is actually standing on a public footpath.
So you've got the right to walk through his lounge.
That's right.
Yes, but there is that gap, you see, where you can go.
I seem to notice that where it went at Pound Lane, the gap where the path started has been opened up again.
So officially you can go from that gap diagonally across the field to the gap in the hedge.
Yeah. Oh, right.
But I did discuss it with Laurie Ritchie, and he said, well, he wasn't prepared to apply for a diversion order to go around to bungalow.
I think Diana thought we ought to walk all along the field on two sides.
We thought, well, we'll just wait and see, but if they're going to do that development and then turn that into amenity land, part of that field, well then the footpath will come back in then. Mm.
It's one of the footpaths that no one really uses, isn't it?
No.
It's one that very rarely was used even in
Ireland. Well, really, I suppose historically, it was used by people who went from the village across there to the cottages on the corner.
Edge of church.
Yes.
And this is what Bob said, a lot of the footpaths door leads directly to the church. Mm. From way back.
Yes, an amusing story. It wasn't a puppet right away, but the house is, you know, church view, and the ones at the back, and then there was a right of way for people where Russell Fortune lived.
Yeah.
He could walk through from there to go to church, and presumably historically for the pump in the yard. Mm. And Anna Wilson, who lived in the state, who was a rather autocratic lady, said, "Doesn't you get embarrassed you've come through my garden?" And Russell said no.
It was a public right of way, always have
been. There's a corresponding one down Mothouse Lane, isn't there, just before where Charles Cruise lived, that went through to Bowen Street, isn't it?
That's right.
There's a parallel one there.
Yes.
They have got a name, I can't remember what they're called.